The following program has been furnished and paid by Nathan P. Ross, CPA, and KSEV is not responsible for its content or the products or services offered.
Welcome to the Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, a show that helps you learn how planners can generate significantly more wealth now. Nathan will answer your questions about business or personal finance, or how to increase current cash flows and generate retirement savings to make sure you're on the right path, and so much more. Whatever your financial goal, Nathan can get you there faster. And now, here's your host, Nathan Ross.
Welcome to this week's Be a Planner Syndication Mass Show with Nathan Ross and my sidekick, Dan DuBose. Both of us are CPAs, and we, as you know, if you listen to the show ongoing, discuss real estate private partnership syndications from a multitude of angles, whether it's the math involved, whether it's the market, as we'll do today. Talk about the math as it's changing a bit in front of our eyes, or right in front of our eyes. We may talk about a couple specific syndications. We'll see what kind of time we have. And not so much in the positive light, but to show you some of the struggles that the market is already starting to evidence. And I think this is key to understand, because this is going to be a period that we're getting ready to enter into, where I think you'll see a lot of opportunities as the economic pressures continue to build, even in this asset space. And it's not to say that there's a precipitous decline in activity, values, et cetera. But let's just say, like with many business recessions or spots, you might call it, the weak are always stressed, and they're the first to start showing the cracks. And yet the strong sense an opportunity, and they're the ones that have their, quote, powder dry. They're keeping some cash available in their investment capital pool, and they are willing to expose that cash, even to these circumstances, for the right price. And so it's key that when you decide you're going to invest in this space, that you understand it's not just the math, the pro forma math that you're being told about with a given syndicator. You'd really like to know something about their background, what kind of pressures have they endured in their business life, that gives some hint as to how they might react the next time. And I've got a couple of examples. I'm not going to mention names, but I think it's telling that in the span of 2 days, I've had two emails come in that were one on how not to do a transaction, and then right behind it, hey, this is how you take advantage of this. I don't want to make it sound like it's someone willing to take advantage of another's hardship. It's really not. Trust me, if this syndicator is able to get this deal done and pushed to the finish line, it's going to help the seller more than it's going to hurt them, at least from what I can gather. And, of course, I'm not running the transaction. I don't have the details. But anyway, well, Dan, welcome to the show this week. I know it's early there for you. I appreciate you getting out of bed to join in.
Good morning.
And curious, we were just discussing the 2022, let's see, was that a Globe Street report? Yes, it was. And it was the state, basically, of the industry report earlier this year, but it had some interesting foresights that I think have already come to bear. I mean, we're halfway through 2022, so I guess it wouldn't be unreasonable, but, you know, we're seeing some trends, and I don't know, maybe we ought to, well, I tell you what, let me just finish our normal introductory disclaimer that just because you hear Dan and I talk about some math and maybe some strategies. We'll probably touch on retirement plans this week, like we normally do, investing those retirement plans in these transactions. But it's a multitude of accounting, tax, and real estate investing information, and that doesn't make us your accountant. Just because you hear the show, we hope you find it educational, possibly entertaining, although, you know, we're just two caveman accountants. We're not real funny or anything like that. But in any event, we try to give you some insights that we've gleaned from our combined, I don't know, I hate to say the number, right, Dan? What is it, 60 or 70 years combined in this business? That's kind of scary. But anyway, so what are some takeaways on this Globe Street, which, by the way, GlobeStreet.com is a industry data gathering, white paper producing organization, and it's GlobeStreet.com. So the street's abbreviated. And if you don't have access to that, you need to go sign up. It's free of charge for most of the things, like this report that's on their site. And it's pretty good information. I mean, it's global in the sense, excuse me, that it's usually looking at the averages, which, as I've mentioned before, the problem with averages, whether you're talking about average tax rates or average performance, especially average performance when you look at these syndications, none of us are average, are we, Dan? We're all actual.
We're actual.
And so the average is maybe a start point, a talking point that should be delved into. And if you don't have some idea of specific examples of performance on any of these, quote, averages, you'll, at some points, you're going to miss the mark if that's what you're relying on. Anyway, Dan, the very beginning of that report, just to give you some perspective, is that owners and operators are at the cross-section of three major multifamily market trends that are occurring nationwide. Do you want to discuss one or all three of those?
The Great Resignation?
First, that's it? That's one of them? That's the first one?
Yeah. Occupancy fallacy?
That's the second.
And the renter research revolution.
That's right. And let's talk with the Great Resignation, and you know, that's like a foreign term to me. Have you ever resigned, Dan, from a job? I can't. It's been so long since I had a job. The one I had, I was 25. I'm 62 now. I was 25 or 24 years old when I did that. And I don't know. I guess you had a similar experience. You were working for Price Waterhouse, if I recall, back in the day.
Yeah, it's been so long ago. I don't remember what it was like.
Yeah, but you remember you were happy when you left, or no, or were you sad?
Oh yeah, I was happy when I left. I was glad to get out and be on my own.
Yeah, I echo that comment, and I've said many times. In a sense, I felt like I had retired at that point because I got to choose what I got to work on. But anyway, pick back up with the Great Resignation and the impact that that's having.
70% of the workforce is resigning. I mean, that just amazes me that the turnover is that much. All of a sudden, it seems like it's the pandemic brought on a paradigm, I should say, I guess, where people just decided, well, I can just stay home and work. Or maybe even just go out on my own and work. It's historically been around 30-50%, but now it's 70. I mean, that's
a huge number.
To think about workforce.
Yeah, I'm sure you've seen some of the stories where they're doing both. Because they figure out when they work remotely, nobody knows if they're doing that for three different, quote, employers, right? You've seen some
of those
stories. That's amazing. But in any event, hey, I tell you what, hold your thoughts. That's the Great Resignation. We'll move to the occupancy fallacy when we come back from our first break. Let's go ahead and take a short break, and we'll be right back with the Be a Planner Syndication Math Show with Nathan Ross, CPA.
I was gonna be rich no matter how much it cost. And I was gonna win no matter how much I lost. Grindstones and rhinestones have made up my life. But I shine like a diamond through sacrifice. I was gonna be rich no matter how much it cost. I was gonna win no matter how much I lost. But I hope that they'll tell me, well done, my child. You've won your reward through your sacrifice. The sacrifice.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-581-0195, 713-581-0195, or you can send an email to nathan@npross.com, nathan@npross.com.
The Syndication Math Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, focuses exclusively on helping investors understand the current options for investing. The syndication arena has changed. You can now take advantage of direct online investing options without expensive upfront membership fees. Nathan Ross, CPA, discusses these options and more, including the math involved with partnership selection, reporting, and performance. On the Syndication Math Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, Sundays at 7 a.m. right here on KSEV.
Here come Jonathan, tell you the story. Hand me now my walking shoes. Here come Johnny with the power and the glory. Black beat, the talking blues. He got the action, he got the motion. Yeah. And a boy can play a dedication, devotion. It's turning all the nighttime into the day. The sun about to see it on the woman.
Okay, welcome back to the second segment of this week's Be a Planner Syndication Math Show with Nathan Ross and Dan DuBose, CPAs. And Dan, I didn't mean to cut you off there. Did you have any other points regarding the trend of the great resignation that we're going through here in 2022 translating to other issues, cost of training new employees, I know there were several.
Yeah, they're talking about, new employees costing, $4,000 to $5,000 to bring on a new employee. I mean, that's quite a load to bear just in itself. And people getting out, quitting, so many of them quitting to come in. It's expensive.
A lot of I'm money. Amazed it's that little. I mean, do you think that's – I mean, I know it's a lot of money, but, it depends on the kind of job you're talking about. I find that to be the remarkable piece of that.
That's another one of those averages, I think, Nathan.
There you go. That's exactly right. That's exactly right. Okay, what else? Anything else on that trend, or you want to move to the occupancy fallacy?
I think occupancy is the more interesting part of this in regards to the multifamily side of this thing. Rents are going up. Houston area just recently published, I think it was the apartment.com, they were talking about rents being in the 1600. I'm talking about a one bedroom again. And this
that's
is
a, right. That's right. The average.
Average.
There's another one. Right.
Is up $149 in the last year. $149 a month. That's $1,800 a year.
It's crazy. It is.
$1,300, $1,319 a month, something like that is what they're saying as of July 14, 2022, as a matter of fact.
Yeah. Well, I tracked that. I don't have my summary handy for both San Antonio and Houston, and I tell you, the gap has narrowed. I don't think San Antonio passed them this year, but there was not an appreciable difference, if I recall. And I thought the Houston, I may have looked at it wrong. I thought it was about a $1,500 increase, which that's in and of itself. Well, I guess that was for the year, so that's probably pretty close to that number you mentioned. And, you know, San Antonio was right there neck and neck. What are some of the rationale, the reasons for this shuffling, as they're calling it, in the rental market when it comes to occupancy? Did you see that?
I think it's kind of interesting. In the article, one of the guys was talking about if the renters are voting with their feet.
Yeah, right. That's exactly
moving,
right.
You know, and we hear a lot about Austin, how much it's growing. And true enough, there's a lot of jobs that were just brought there by Tesla, if nothing else. But, you know, people are bailing out of the high-tech states, particularly one on the left coast we know is California. It's, I mean, they're just flooding here, and it's causing the rents to Austin area particularly, I'm sure, to go up, and it's going to affect Houston as well.
Yeah, you know, I think you're right. And assorted submarkets, like, you know, we've talked about the transaction that Lane Bean, PilotLegacy.com, has done or is doing there in the Lockhart area. And Lockhart, you know, I know I used to think about it as a diversion for some good barbecue between San Antonio and Houston. I never approached it from I-35, which is, you know, the artery that runs up from San Antonio to Austin, but, you know, it's not any further. In fact, I think it's a few minutes less. If you look at the taking the exit off I-10 to get there versus the trip to get to the Austin city limits, I think it's like 17 miles, if I remember correctly. And that's nothing in the current market where they've had so many people come to Austin for you to say, well, hey, I'm going to live there, as opposed to Buda or, you know, I've forgotten some of the other places there nearby that are really bedroom communities, I guess, of Austin. What else
is one of the articles that talks about, says a big chunk of the people that are moving to the smaller communities, and I guess that's what you're talking about with Lockhart. You know, it is a smaller, used to be a smaller community. Now it's getting to be one of those, getting to be part of Austin itself, I guess, much like Houston.
Yeah,
just so many little cities.
Yeah, I'm not sure where you draw the line on that. I know they've gone from, it seems like 3,000 or so in population, if you back up, I don't know, 8, 9, 10 years to where now they're over, I think it's 13, which again, if they were out, you know, 50 miles away, that wouldn't rate. But when you're already close, that's quite a chunk of movement. And of course, that's not just on the, let's say it would be the southwest part of, or side of Austin, I think, if I've got my directions right.
Yeah.
You know, the other, you know, East Austin and Southeast Austin, those areas have also had significant development. I noticed that one of the, you know, a lot of this migration, they're calling it renter migration, started to rise at the beginning of the pandemic. And it's hard to imagine this many people, but I guess it's plausible when you look at what has been going on crime-wise in some of our big cities, that in 2020 alone, 7 million households moved to a different county. There was also a 23% rate of people moving out of the big cities in favor of mid-size and small communities. That's a lot of movement when you realize all the restrictions we had on us and maybe a reduced amount of income coming in that it would take to pay for those moves. But anyway, and then they also, renters have redefined what an ideal home means. Did you see that comment? Dan, I thought that was a pretty telling statistic, because I think that one is going to be ongoing. I don't know that we'll see a go back to the routine before, but I'm referring to the working remotely concept and, you know, wanting maybe a bigger office, better, higher quality digital resources, you know, better internet connections, faster internet connections, less expensive internet connections, and that's been a big draw, I guess, for both the new and the recently renovated properties, right?
You know, you got to cater to the renter. If you cater to the renter, you know, you want to keep up with these. I mean, I'm talking about the multifamily people want to cater to the renter. We want to keep them, but we also want to attract new. To the, you know, we're running at a 90, you know, mid-90 or higher occupancy rate in the Houston area right now. So the, you know, the renters are looking, they're saying, but my current renters are looking as well as those that are moving in. So, you know, they're always looking to upgrade. What does it take to upgrade? As you say, in the, you know, faster internet connection these days, or a cheaper connection or less cost as far as their internet's concerned, or their, I mean, it's just another one of those avenues that we can take advantage of, or the operator can take advantage of, to attract the new tenant, to get him excited, to raise that net income, net operating income, possibly.
And it's in many cases, it's probably worth paying a little bit extra rent to for the convenience of not having to go into the office as much. I mean, it looks like a lot of companies are coming back from the pandemic where they are going to have, you know, X number of days mandated for office.
But not five.
Attendance, right. So that makes it all feasible. Let's see, there was something. Oh, you raised something when we were talking about this, so about the ideological reasons, political leanings, et cetera, that I don't know. I mean, you've probably seen an article somewhere. That didn't mention that in here. I mean, it mentioned ideological reasons, but I didn't see it discussed
it's
past that point.
I mean,
point.
There was a little brief. They said they're, you know, voting with their feet, as I mentioned earlier, but they're going where their politics suit them.
Yeah.
And that's the thing that kind of reminds me of the California people getting out of there just simply because of the cost of living. It's nothing else.
Yeah. I think what you're saying is that they're going away, not coming in.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
I was thinking, now, wait a minute, how many people do I know moving to California? And the answer is nada. I don't know anybody going that direction. But
yeah, we actually had a friend 2 years ago that did move to California because that's where their kids live. I said, well, you should have brought them this way, you know?
Yeah, that's true. That's true. What else? Let's move to the, let's see, what was the last one? I went past it.
Renter research.
Was that the third trend? Okay, I guess it was. I'm sorry. I totally missed.
Revolution.
Right. So, and I didn't read that section thoroughly, but is that referring to all the digital, property tours, all the ability to know everything about every property, go look at the Google reviews or whatever, Yelp reviews? Man, that's something I see more and more syndicators worrying about when they take over a property, because a property may have a bunch of bad reviews and then they're trying to change the character. I'm sure there's strategies for dealing with that. People that are more adept at social media than I am certainly probably know how to plant the seeds in the right spots to kind of change the trend. But what are some of the other information sources I see here? I just pulled up that page and it looks like they've got several mentioned.
Yeah, I'm looking for it. That's the
Go to page 9, I think, Dan. And I already mentioned social media, and then there's, you know, various review platforms, video,
six
emails.
Properties, searching six properties at one time.
Yeah, that's pretty telling. That's pretty telling. In some markets, now maybe in Houston, you could search six on each side of town, but you know, understanding what a realistic review is, you know, they've got a quote here from Google. Naturally, reviews are useful when they are honest and objective. Well, you know, that's a true statement. If you see a restaurant or a hotel or I guess, an apartment building that's only got positive reviews, I think you got to question that. And I think you learn more in life sometimes from hardship instead of success. And I think you probably learn more as a property owner from objectively negative reviews. And I know in our two properties in San Antonio, I get reviews that at times I think anybody looking at it would have to assume that we wrote them for the guest. And I'm telling you, it is amazing how many people, generally speaking, if you treat people right, you get good reviews. And in the Airbnb world that we play in, for you to have the Superhost designation, you've got to get 90% or higher across six categories. And we've done that for 48 straight quarters now, 12 years. And so
that's hard work to do that, Nathan, and that's critical.
Yeah, it's a matter of, you know, it's like anything. I know we used to stress about getting over that mark each quarter, and like years ago, and now we really don't think about it because we've got enough traffic where we know what the averages are, and we know that, hey, if we're paying attention on housekeeping, we're paying attention on responding communications. Communications is one of the areas. But anyway, this goes times 100 on a 300-unit apartment building. And you know, when you've got staff changing over, the staff, by the way, are changing as fast as these tenants are, that's potentially problematic. Well, Dan, let's go to a second break. And then when we come back, let's talk about some of the current math metrics as they may be changing. I've got a question that's come in from one of our listeners via text, and we'll pick up with that when we return. Back with more of the Be a Planner Syndication Math Show with Nathan Ross and Dan Dubose.
With all you do, your attitude just seems to be so good. How do you keep it? Well, I'm not the Dalai Lama, but I'll try to offer up a few words of advice. You better get to living, giving. Don't forget to throw in a little forgiving and love along the way. You better get to knowing, showing a little bit more concern about where you're going. There's a word unto the wise. You better get to living.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-581-0195, 713-581-0195, or you can send an email to nathan@npross.com, nathan@npross.com.
BeAPlanner.com wants to ask you, when's the last time your tax pro called with a way to save you taxes? Seriously, do you want to work with a planner or a reporter? A planner knows which tax code sections are the best wealth accumulation tools. Less tax, more profit. Learn more at BeAPlanner.com or tune in each Saturday at 5 p.m. for the Be a Planner Show with CPA Nathan Ross right here on AM 700 KSEV.
Okay, welcome back to the third segment of this week's Be a Planner Syndication Mass Show. And I wanted to touch on some changes with, it's going to show you how even here midway through 2022, we're already seeing signs of difficulties in terms of getting to agreement between buyer and seller. And then I'm going to follow that with the question that one of our listeners who invest in multifamily. So they're seeing an opportunity, I think is how I would phrase it. An email came in from one of my clients that's investing with a Texas-based syndicator. They've had a deal in progress in the San Antonio market. They have not closed it yet, but it has the math pro forma that would fit within the context of what we seek. And just going to read you a bit of the email without I'm going to try to redact real time as I hit words that need to be redacted. Dear investors, thank you for being patient. Several issues have frustrated the transaction and clouded progress. Let me provide a situation report and a battle plan to capture investment success. And by the way, this syndicator is one of the best communicators that I think I've seen, and he's a professional. He's not being put back by difficulty. This guy's had hardship in life, knows how to react, and I think this email is spot on that kind of identifies his personality. In mid-June, we discovered a non-conforming zoning issue that affected 25% of the property. And for those of you that don't understand that, I've had that in the San Antonio market as well. And essentially, if you've got an older property that has been doing something, a certain type of rental, like short-term rentals would be a good example, the Airbnb model, and the city changes zoning regulation where they can't go to folks that were already doing short-term rentals and say, oh, you're in violation, you got to stop, or worse yet, they yank your certificate of occupancy. And so the non-conforming zoning issue is not a problem until there's a new buyer. Then the new buyer does not meet the non-conforming criteria, and they've got to go back to the Board of Variance, I believe it's called, and seek permission. And that can be in the city of San Antonio or Bexar County, that can be one of the most frustrating processes that you've ever been through in your life. But in any event, that issue, lenders are aware of that. Owners are aware of that, both selling owners and buying owners. So the selling owner's got an issue, and the buying owner may have an issue, depends on how friendly they think the Board of Variance will be. And then they've got to worry about the lenders. The lender going to get cold feet? The last thing a lender wants to do is make a loan on a property where you can only utilize 75% of the assets. In any event, this issue increased owner's risk and added additional operational expense. Further, the lender required city verification and a legal opinion on this matter to ensure that their position was protected, as you would expect. So in any event, just to wrap this up, they paid an additional deposit to extend the closing, and then they, requested an extension, arguing that, hey, the owner, current owner, didn't even disclose this issue, which that doesn't surprise me. But in any event, they rejected the offer for extension, the current owner did. And so, we've elected to terminate the contract due to zoning misrepresentation and lender comfort with this status. Shortly after the seller received our notice of termination, they offered several post facto cooperative concessions to remedy. We reengaged with a few new deal points based on the current market operating conditions. You can rest assured that meant the seller would have to take less effectively. And the discussion has been ongoing the last couple of weeks with intermittent progress. But there's how this syndicator works. He says that, first of all, we're fighting hard to protect your money and be well prepared for any future economic headwinds. And I would suggest that's exactly what I would expect out of this particular syndicator. But he says, finally, if we are unable to make this transaction work, we are developing several investor options that include 100% of your money back or transition to a similar investment. He said, I realize this situation report opens many questions that he will seek to answer, I presume, on future webinars. And Enzi's message was just basically thanking people for their patience and letting him work through the issues. And so that, when you read that email, I would have to think you've got a certain sense of, you know, comfort that, hey, this guy's awake at the switch. We're not getting ready to stick our head into something that may end up being problematic, okay? Dan, the question that's come in, and they specifically wanted Dan Dubose to address this question, so I'm going to toss it to you, is that is it better, as we're looking at transactions right now, to take a lower LTV rate, that would be the loan to value, and most multifamily transactions are funded at 75 to 80% of the purchase price. A lot of 75% right now, as you might expect. But the question is it better to take a lower LTV rate on a property, like maybe 65% instead of 75% now that we may be heading into a recession? And of course, this isn't really a seller issue. This is the buyer side. The seller probably couldn't care less how much cash you're putting in versus how much the lender is going to pay. So how do you answer that question?
You know, do we want the property? Can we improve the property? Can we improve the net operating income? I would say I would go for the 65% anytime, as long as you can get that capital raise. I mean, the more equity you can put in it, well, I was going to say the better, but not necessarily so. It depends on your operating income. What can we do with it, I believe?
It's going to affect, I guess,
the whole overall operation of the project. You got to go get that additional 10%. That's a lot of money when it comes down to already having a capital raise that's probably in the several millions of dollars.
Yeah, I forget on this one. It is multiple. Well, I think it's a $15 to $20 million capital raise. But bottom line is, it's very much a two-edged sword, because I'm not sure what the underwriting was undertaken at. I'm assuming, based on the way they phrased the question, it's a 75% LTV that's been proposed that they would get. But I'm going to tell you from personal experience, I was the lead on a transaction that was going to be in Austin at one point. Great area, great property, but it had a lot of students. And the lender had kind of set that issue to the side as they approved our original 80-20 debt to equity split. So they were going to fund 80%. And right at the end, they wanted to do a second property visit, and rates were getting softer. They weren't, this would have been, I forget what this goes back a long time, but I would think it may have been 2007 or 8, right before we hit, you know, the most recent recession, I guess you'd call it. In any event, they came back out to the property, reiterated they really liked the deal, but they managed to get a meeting with the property manager towards the end of the day of that visit, and they asked her, well, what happens when May rolls around and all these kids leave for the summer? And she said, oh, we just let them keep their stuff in their unit, charge them $100-$150 a month. And it's like, man, we just felt like a dagger had gone in our back. And we had already discussed the issue of the students with the lender and explained, hey, those students are on their way out. They just don't know it, because that's how we can raise the market rate. Rents were a good 25 cents a month higher. And that was our plan. Well, that didn't soothe their anxiety. And they came back and said, well, we'll still do your deal, but instead of an 80% LTV, we want 70. And I'm just telling you, if you've underwritten at a higher rate and you're down to a level of profit that you're okay with and you can make the deal work for all the investors, that's not a big deal. But the only way I could look at it was our profits just went down by a factor of, I don't know, 20 or 25% from where they would have been by that 10% rate drop. In fact, it's probably more than that. And so I'm not sure I would tell you that 65% is better than 75, except from the perspective that you've got a longer runway if things get really tight. And I know somebody you know, Dan, a mutual friend of ours, used to be very close to one of the leading developers, if you go back 30 or 40 years, in Houston, where if you went west on Westheimer, he owned at least one of the four corners for quite a few blocks out, right? Or so the story goes. And he would never put more than 50% into a deal because he figured at 50%, he's still going to be standing while others won't be. And so I guess there is that consideration. And of course, there's also the consideration that there's so much pressure right now to get money out of Wall Street, protect your cash. Cash is a loser right now in terms of purchasing power, the precipitous decline. And as far as retirement plans go, I hear more people that acknowledge I'm not going to get there by the time I'm 65. It may be 75. What are other options? You know, they've already run the numbers. And the problem is, what numbers are you going to run? Because there's only so much you can do in terms of pegging the ups and downs, right, when they'll occur. And so these real estate projects, a 65% LTV, I'm willing to bet you, would still beat the cash flows compared to mutual funds and stocks, bonds, et cetera. Maybe index funds, but index funds essentially are an average of most of the mutual funds, right, or stocks, I guess. I'm not exactly sure how they work. I just know you're not going to hit any home runs, but you're not going to, you know, get thrown out at third either, typically, right? So I don't know. One other thing, do you think the trends that you were reading about in that market report portend of mid-size and smaller apartments being in, at some point, being in more favor with current tenants, or do you think that's just compounds your problems? I'm curious.
Get a more intimate relationship, a closer relationship, I guess I should say, with your manager, with your owner, even possibly. You know, it's smaller being, what, 150 or less?
I would say 50 to 100, maybe 25 to 100 would fill or fall in that gap. I mean, it's going to be a trade-off typically of amenities versus, in most cases, maybe rates or it won't be as high. Hey, Dan, I tell you what, we've gone past the mark here on our last break. Let's go ahead and take a short break. We'll be right back and we'll continue this discussion on the current math metrics, et cetera.
Is it easy? No, it ain't. Can I fix it? No, I can't. I sure ain't gonna take it lying down. Will I make it? Maybe so. Will I give up? Oh, no. I'll be fighting till I'm 6 feet underground. I'm gonna woman up and take it like a man. I'm gonna buckle up, be tough enough to take control.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-581-0195, 713-581-0195, or you can send an email to nathan@npross.com, nathan@npross.com.
The Syndication Math Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, focuses exclusively on helping investors understand the current options for investing. The syndication arena has changed. You can now take advantage of direct online investing options without expensive upfront membership fees. Nathan Ross, CPA, discusses these options and more, including the math involved with partnership selection, reporting, and performance. On the Syndication Math Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, Sundays at 7 a.m. right here on KSEV.
song, Bobby McGee. I'm just longing to be free. Take me away, I want to be. Big dreams and fantasies. And there are many just like me with big dreams and fantasies.
Okay, welcome back to the Be a Planner Syndication Mass Show. We've got just a few minutes remaining. I had another text that I'm going to have to defer to next week, but essentially wanting to talk about some of the relative changes in the math metrics on other fronts, like equity multiples and presumably internal rate of returns, et cetera. Let's push that to next Sunday, and let me talk about, I'm going to go back to a statement I made earlier. Dan, I know you've talked about this yesterday, which is the sad state of retirement savings in America. And I think, correct me, or actually you tell me, what's the statistics of how many Americans have zero retirement savings? Do you know, I think we were talking about that on yesterday's show.
It's a big number.
Yeah, 70% aren't prepared. I think 30% actually have Zippo. No savings. So given that, what options do you see out there, investment options, are there any that you know of besides these real estate private partnership syndications that might be a way to change your trajectory on retirement savings? And I struggle when I get that question is, well, what can I do besides what you're talking about? What else is there, Dan? What do you know?
Keep working.
So that's the plan B that so many Americans will have to do. And it's unfortunate because, you know, the big hoax, you know, I hear assorted gurus talk about how the 401 and IRA is doesn't function. Well, that's not exactly true. I've had clients that worked at big companies, showed up every day, just happened to hit the 80s with the Fidelity Magellan funds, things like that, to where they left, you know, Exxon or USAA, et cetera, with $2 million, you know, at age 65. So I'm not going to say it doesn't work. I'm going to tell you, for most people, it doesn't function, and timing is everything, and the actual options you have in your plan is a big deal. And that's why we show you or explain that, hey, a lot of people that don't think they have money they can deploy actually do, and it's sitting in their 401k at the office, the big company plan. And you know, Dan, I know we've talked about the Quadro many times in the past. Do you want to just give a quick summary of that, or you want me to discuss that?
Yeah, Quadro is in Texas. We have available. You can take your funds out of your corporate 401k or where you're currently working, actually, by doing a Quadro. I can't remember the acronym stands for qualified.
Qualified Domestic Relations Order. Think of it as a postnuptial arrangement, where you basically, yeah, we're repartitioning your 401 assets over to a spouse, and then that spouse is able to roll it into the self-directed model of the 401 trust that we utilize, where you control your money. So now you've moved from having a choice of, I don't know, half a dozen Vanguard funds or Fidelity or whatever, or I guess trading stock. I'm not sure. I don't have a 401k with a big company, and so I can't tell you exactly how some of those work. But I know my self-directed 401.
It'll be mutual funds. Yeah.
Mainly mutual funds. Well, in any event, I know with my self-directed 401, I can make investments in real estate private partnerships. And I'm telling you, the average rates of returns typically far exceed, and I mean consistently, on what the stock market or the mutual fund market will provide. And that's how you get out from behind the eight ball. And if you're not doing that, or you want to do it, go to our website, beaplanner.com, BEA PLANNER.com and fill out our intake forms or just schedule a call. I'd rather have your intake form so we know what we're dealing with and can actually give you specifics. But the important thing is get started. Get off the lifetime deferral treadmill. Let's not make working your plan B. Let's get some income streams coming in as you're asleep each night. You've got somebody out there. You'll be passive. Let the active, the lead partner, run the transaction, and let's vet those folks to make sure we're getting one that knows, you know, has been shot at before. We know how he's going to react, as opposed to the ones that are trying to regain control of a transaction that's gone off the tracks, which there are those out there. And so in any event, so and then the other thing I was going to mention when you talk about retirement is the length of time now that most people are living due to medical technology and other tools, to where now you run a real risk. Even if you think you've got enough, let's say you've got $1 million to $1.5 million, and you think, well, that's enough. Well, maybe if everything plays out the way you think, that $700,000 that might be left after the government takes their chunk, oh, you're thinking, where's that coming out at? That's called taxes. Each year you take them out, right, Dan?
That's so. Right.
So how much do you think you need to be self-insured in retirement now when you factor in the tax bite, unless you do the Roth conversion, which is what we talk about every week, usually on the Saturday show? What do you think the new normal would be, Dan, to be self-insured once you factor taxes and long-term health care in?
$3 million.
I think that's a good number, and that might not cover it. Depends on if one or both spouses require long-term health care or chronic illness issues. But
it's a toward that zero tax.
Well, that's right. And you know, if you get started early enough, we can work on getting – it's not necessarily getting you into tax-free investments, although we like that. That's our preference, is the Roth 401, which has many advantages. But there's also a way to do this without retirement money. If you're just investing, you know, money market funds or money you've already got in the stock market, you're trying to get it out. You know, real estate has some amazing tax benefits even before you consider putting an end to this self-directed 401 trust paradigm that we work with, which pays no tax until you start taking money out. And then even then, it's just a small piece. But with real estate in general, we're able to offset gains with passive loss carry forwards, and we can get there down to near zero. Maybe every third, fourth, fifth year we get to pay a little tax. But anyway, well, listen, we're coming to the end of the show. We enjoyed doing this once again. We'll be back at 5 p.m. on Saturday this coming week. And Dan, I appreciate you joining the show again, and let's get you some more questions lined up for next week. Okay?
Thank you.
Okay, we'll see you then.
Thanks for listening to Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA. Be sure to tune in next Saturday at 5 for another edition of Be a Planner Show here on AM 700 KSEV.